It is Super Bowl week in the NFL, specifically for the Philadelphia Eagles and the Kansas City Chiefs. Tennessee Titans, like 30 other teams across the league, once again continuing with their offseason. And we will look at some of the latest developments going on with this team in this episode of the Believe in Titans podcast with our usual cast of characters. John Glennon. John, how are you?
I am well.
And Denard Walker. Denard, how are you?
I'm doing great, David. How you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. I am, of course, David Beauclair. And let me remind you that the Believe in Titans podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. As always, Bet Online remains your number one source for all your sports betting this season. Everything from the NFL playoffs, or the Super Bowl in this case, to pro and college basketball, UFC, MMA, and more. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at Bet Online. With live betting options, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable, BetOnline is truly the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite leagues and events. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your rewards. BetOnline.ag, where the game starts. And before we look ahead to what's coming this weekend, I think it's important to look back to a previous Super Bowl team. ESPN on Sunday night debuted the Bullies of Baltimore, a look at the 2000 Baltimore Ravens, a team all Titans fans know well, a team that our man Denard Walker knows all too well. And as you would expect,
thank you, David.
If you haven't seen it, the Titans were featured prominently in that presentation. And I thought it was really enjoyable on a lot of fronts. You know, those guys are still big personalities and whatnot. But as in typical Ravens fashion, they talked a really, really good game. And specifically in relation to the divisional playoff game at Nissan Stadium, which at the time was Adelphia Coliseum, when they eliminated the Titans 24-10. And to hear those guys tell it some 20-odd years later, they came into town that day and they whipped you guys, Denard, from start to finish, is the story they're telling, which is absolutely not true. I mean, this game was tied 10-10 early in the fourth quarter, and the Ravens did what championship teams do and for which they deserve full credit, right? They make a couple of big plays at critical moments. With a little less than 3 minutes into the fourth quarter, they block a field goal, return it for a touchdown. Then with just under 7 minutes to go, Ray Lewis intercepts the pass, returns that 50 yards for a touchdown. They win 24-10. But you look at the stats from that game, and I mean, Baltimore had 134 yards of total offense. They converted 2 of 11 third downs. They had just 6 first downs the entire contest. Jamal Lewis, their running back, who was the centerpiece of that offense at the time, 17 carries for 47 yards. I mean, the Titans had almost as many rushing yards, 126, as the Ravens had total yards, which leads to one of the interesting elements of this feature on the Ravens, which is to say Trent Dilfer says that after the team played in Nashville in week 11 during the regular season, the next day he's in Baltimore, he can't find his playbook anywhere. And he says his routine and ritual was such that there was no way he could have lost it. It had to have been stolen. And then they come back for the playoff game. And he said, Denard, you guys were calling out everything they were doing. And you know, you were on top of everything that they did. And he even said 10 or 12 years ago, he ran into Greg Williams, your defensive coordinator at the time. And Greg Williams told him, you know, something to the effect of, how did you enjoy knowing that we knew everything you guys were doing? So I've got to ask you, did you guys have the Ravens playbook that day?
No, we did. No one showed it to me. No, absolutely not. Trent Dilfer, man, first of all, God, David, you know, I just had a relapse. I was doing so good. Until you had to go back and mention all of that that happened 20 some years ago. And I remember that game quite vividly. It was what, 10 to 10. And let me just say this. We got a dose of our own medicine. So if you go back in 1999, Coach Fisher, who I love and respect, when we was getting ready to play Jacksonville in the AFC Championship, I'll be honest with you. I don't think there was a lot of guys in that locker room. I didn't think they believed we can go to Jacksonville and win a third time. Coach Fisher's whole response was, if we don't make it, then they're not going to make it. We're going to make sure we punish them. And what he did was he said that playing in Jacksonville is like playing a home game in Nashville. And that ticked Jacksonville off. And so when we went into Jacksonville, they were not ready to play the game. They was ready to annihilate us physically, like fighting. They had guys punching us, you name it. And we knew that was going to happen. So what we did, we got in their minds. And so what happened was, what happened in Jacksonville happened to us in 2000 against Baltimore. What Baltimore did was they got into our heads. What happened was big play Shay, a.k.a. Shannon Sharp, a.k.a. the Hall of Famer. He goes off and runs his big mouth like he's good at. Shannon is a master at doing that. And what he did was Shannon said that if our offense don't score, I guarantee you that Tennessee's offense is not going to score. And so that ticked a lot of guys off in the locker room. So we were more about revenge and just going out there and just getting rid of Baltimore. Instead, it became more of a grudge match rather than a football game. And this is a team that, and let me just say this, the problem in that game was Greg Williams, who is our defensive coordinator. I love him to death. We know how he is as a defensive coordinator. Him and Brian Billick hated each other with a passion. I don't know their history. I don't know who caught who doing whatever with who, but these two hated each other to the point where you had to keep them apart. So it was personal because Brian Billick was not only the head coach, he was the offensive coordinator. So what happened that game, the reason that we lost is, you think about it, you just said they had 130 yards of offense. Yeah. And Jamal Lewis didn't do much. But what people don't talk about is the busted play that went almost 60, 70 yards that Trent Dilfer found Shannon Sharp, and they ended up going 50 or 60 yards. A majority of those yardage came on one play. That one play we put in the week before that game. And so what happened was, it was one formation that Brian Billick ran at probably in the third or fourth quarter when we weren't thinking about that play. We ain't ran that coverage all year. We busted it. And that's how Baltimore goes up ahead of us. And the rest was history.
Yeah, Dilfer was 5 for 16 passing that day for
100. He didn't do any. Dilfer didn't do nothing.
Didn't do nothing. No, but here's the thing. Shannon Sharp had a 56-yard reception.
That's
Qadri
it.
Ishmael had a 33-yard reception, and Jamal Lewis had his longest run on the day was 14 yards. Between those three plays, that's 103 yards right there. They ran 36 other plays for 31 yards that day. But
offensively, they only scored 10 points.
Yeah, yeah,
one
exactly.
touchdown off a busted coverage and a field goal.
Yeah,
and that was really the coming out of Ray Lewis.
And you know, it's funny because that Ray Lewis interception too, I think, has taken on a certain mythology over the years, where people, you know, sort of want to remember it as, you know, Ray ripped the ball out of Eddie's hands, and it was symbolically ripped out the Titans' hearts at the same time. But the fact was, the pass was behind him. Eddie never had the ball in his hands. He was juggling it. Ray Lewis, being Ray Lewis, was there in the right position. His feet were under him. His head was up. You know, he didn't run through Eddie. He ran through the ball then and took it and went the other way. But there's a very interesting clip too from the Ravens locker room after that game, which I won't spoil for certain people, but it will make Titans fans angry, to be sure. But Denard, real quickly, take us inside the Titans locker room after that game. I assume that had to be one of the most, if not most, the most disappointing defeats of your career, and probably most everybody in that room that day. Yes.
You know what? It was demoralizing. I mean, you think about it. We were 13-3. We should have been 15-1. We lost two games by a field goal. I mean, we should have been 15-1, one loss to Buffalo, and that was the first game of the season. Well, let me get this off my chest, David. It wasn't the Baltimore Ravens, and I love Marvin Lewis. He recruited me out of high school when he's at the University of Pittsburgh, but it was the Tennessee Titans with the number one defense in the regular season. When you look at that game, like you said, they had 130 yards of total offense. We had two costly busted coverages. We had a busted coverage where Shannon Sharp went 56 yards. It was 10-10. It was 17-10. And then you talk about the play that Ray made on Eddie when the ball was behind him. If you take away those two plays, we come out of Nashville. We win that game. But what a lot of people also don't know is Baltimore would have never made the playoffs if we would have took care of them in Nashville about 3 weeks prior to that game. The problem that we had was our defensive coordinator, Greg Williams, who I adore, I love, I respect. He has an issue with Brian Billick. He calls an all-out blitz on a fourth and 11, an all-out blitz on fourth and 11. Dane and Sidney and the receiver get tangled up. Baltimore gets the ball at the 3 yard line. They go in and score, and then we know the rest there. Again, when people talk about Greg Williams, you remember the game? Who was that? The New York Jets
Yes, there
versus
was.
who was
Yep.
that? Who was the Jets versus, was it Oakland at the time?
I think you're right. I think that's
Yeah.
who it was.
And he calls an all-out blitz when the Jets were about to win like their first game. And people said, Denard, does Greg Williams really call games like that? And I said, you know what? Yes. If he's mad and angry, he's going to blitz you. And let me just say this, David, last but not least. When my rookie year in 1997, we're playing the Arizona Cardinals. We're beating the snot off of Arizona down, and it was hot and muggy. We're up some 38, 41 to 12, 15, or 20. I don't know the score, but we were blowing him out. He calls an all-out blitz with about 3 minutes left in the game. When he calls the blitz, now I'm just a rookie, so I don't say anything. All of the veterans turn around. There was about eight or nine, Eddie Robertson, Marcus Robinson, Blaine Bishop. Instead of us covering or getting ready for the next play, they're pointing their finger at Greg. Don't you dare call a blitz on a fourth. Are you kidding me? Greg said, listen, when I'm the coach, you do what I tell you. And Jeff Fisher's like, Greg, settle down. Hey, do what you guys need to do. So they call a cover three. And then we would run off the field. About nine guys ran after Greg, said, what in the are you doing? It was just chaos when we was blowing Arizona away. So yes, I blame that game on Greg Williams, man.
Well, if he did have the playbook, he used it well
He
most of
probably had
that
it,
game.
but he didn't share it because he knew he would have got caught.
Yeah, that's probably true. Well, it's we don't know who this year's Super Bowl champion is, but as we mentioned, we know it's either going to be the Philadelphia Eagles or Kansas City Chiefs. An interesting matchup in a lot of ways. I read something that said it's the best team against the best quarterback, and in that vein, it's going to be sort of a statement on where the NFL is right now and what kind of game it is. So, let's look at that real quickly. John Glennon, who do you like and why in this game?
I think I've kind of changed in the last week or so. Initially I sort of favored Kansas City. I like the, of course, the explosive offense, hard to go against Pat Mahomes, but the sort of the all-round team that Philadelphia has. It's sure, they have the great offense. They have an offense that can beat you both with the running game, and if need be, they can go to the air and beat you with the passing game too. But I also like their defense more than Kansas City. I like the way they get after the quarterback. And they haven't needed to do a whole lot of blitzing in order to do that either. So I think that's going to be a big difference. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Patrick Mahomes. It's going to make life difficult for him. I think Philly has the certainly has the offense that can control the ball too and keep the ball away from Patrick Mahomes. So I'm going to go with Philadelphia. I think it'll be a fairly high scoring game. I'll go somewhere in the neighborhood of, 31-24, 31-27, somewhere in that neck of the woods. And just for fun, I'll throw an MVP possibility in there. The easy one is Jalen Hurts, but maybe I might switch it up just because, he doesn't always have the big passing yards. I'll go with a defender this time around. I'm going to go with Haason Reddick, who's been getting after the quarterback all year. Been a big disruptor, a guy who creates chaos. So I'll say he's going to be the MVP, and Philly is going to beat the Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, the Chiefs are really good on the interior of their offensive line. Their center and two guards are terrific. Where they can be vulnerable is the tackles and the rush coming from the outside. I agree. I think Haason Reddick has the potential to have a really, really big game. To me, it feels like the Eagles are just one of those teams this year, and I don't want to put them in the same class as the 85 Bears, for example. But that whole year in 85, you felt like, okay, the Bears are just going to go ahead and win this thing, and that's kind of the way it's felt with this Eagles team. And I say that because it seems like they have an answer for everything, and the NFL has sort of, it's been in a transition period the last 4 or 5 years, and with all the changes in the passing rules and the increased use of analytics and going for it on fourth down and these sorts of things, and it almost seems like the Eagles are the first team now to figure it out in this day and age from a personnel perspective. And I agree. I think it's going to be Patrick Mahomes is going to do Patrick Mahomes things. He's going to keep the Chiefs in it, but I think the Eagles are going to have, they're just going to have too many answers ultimately. So I'm looking at like a 34-24, and I'm going to say, just to irritate Titans fans maybe a little bit more, AJ Brown has done next to nothing in these playoffs so far. I kind of feel like AJ Brown is due for a really, really big game. So I'm going to say AJ Brown is my MVP. Denard, how do you see this thing shaping up?
Well, I want to start off, first of all, I'm not going to be long. I like to say history is going to be made this Super Bowl. History, you have two starting backs to ever start a Super Bowl, Patrick Mahomes at 27 and Jalen Hurts 24. Last but not least, I'm a Texas guy, so I have to throw it out there. This is going to be Southeast Texas versus East Texas. Of course, Jalen from Channel View in the Houston area, and Patrick Mahomes, the pride of White House, Texas, East Texas, out there by Tyler. So congratulations. I have to throw that out because, I'm a Texas guy.
Of course.
But I do believe that I have to get that. I have to get that in. But, defenses to me win championships. And when I look at this Kansas City team, again, we all know about Patrick's ankle, but he's going to be 100%, I'm saying 100%, but Patrick be 50%. He could still compete on any level. But when I look at this Chiefs, when I look at their receivers, they have a depleted receiving core. You look at Juju Smith-Schuster, he's dealing with knee issues. You talk about Kadarius Toney, hamstring and ankle injuries. And when you look at Mecole Hardman, that's their deep threat. That's that player that gets over the top of the defense. He won't be playing. He's dealing with a pelvic injury. And you're talking about the perimeter game where you have a depleted receiver. You have a quarterback with a high ankle sprain. He's still nursing. And then you got to go against that Eagles secondary of the all-pro James Bradbury. You're talking about Darius, Big Price Slay, Marcus Epps, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, Reed Blankenship. I mean, this secondary, David, is loaded. And then what happens is you already got a quarterback that's hurt. You got a depleted secondary in Kansas City. And you telling me you got to go against that front for Philly? You know they're going to have Patrick on the run. Haason Reddick. I know Tennessee, they don't like to hear that name, but he leads the league in 16 sacks. I don't even think the game is going to be close. I think Philly dominates this game from start to finish. I got 45, 14. I got this Philly wow. winning this game big. I'm sorry. I got Philly winning this game big.
Don't apologize. They are.
I mean, some money off that.
You wonder too how much, because the fact that they handled business so well their first two playoff games, guys have rested. Like, we mentioned Haason Reddick. I read where the two games where he's played the fewest amount of snaps this season have been the two playoff games, because he hasn't been needing to rush the quarterback in the fourth quarter of these games. They've had such a handle on them. I mean, that sort of thing's got to be worth something too. And you know, he's not the only veteran who's ended these games on the sidelines, but we will see what happens there, and let's start looking ahead. Though the 2023 NFL draft is about 3 months away, and in the meantime, a lot of attention will be paid to the 2019 draft, which of course was a really, really good one for the Titans, because it's contract time for some of these guys. Jeffrey Simmons, of course, is he's signed to the fifth year option. We all expect, and you know, I don't think anyone would argue with the idea that he is going to get a contract extension at some point. Second round pick AJ Brown, of course, is in Philadelphia. Fourth round pick Amani Hooker already has his new deal. He signed an extension last year. Fifth round pick DeAndre Walker was cut a couple years ago. But then you've got two other guys. Third round pick Nate Davis. Sixth round pick David Long. Both have been starters, both have been productive players for this team, both are scheduled to be unrestricted free agents this year. So John Glennon, is one more than the other likely to be re-signed? Are they, you expect both of them to be back? How do you shape up their current statuses?
Well, you know, I like them both, you know, and I know, I mean, we should say first, of course, the Titans are not in the best cap position right now. They're over the cap. They're one of the worst position teams in the league in terms of the cap. Now, that could change a great deal between now and free agency if they cut a few veterans who we probably expect them to cut. But at the same time, they don't have a ton of money. So that's not a case where they can just re-sign and sign any players that they want. That said, I think there seem to be pretty compelling reasons to bring both Davis and David Long back. You know, that offensive line for the Titans, we know it wasn't good last year and it needs a lot of improvement, but you need at least one or two, I think, building blocks from last season, you know, guys that played pretty well, I think, to build around. It's pretty difficult to wipe out the entire offensive line and start over again. You know, both in terms of getting quality experienced players and in terms of a payroll. Nate Davis had, you know, maybe his best year last year, you know, since getting drafted. I think he certainly took big strides in terms of pass pro, which was the most difficult adjustment for him. He's always been a good run blocker, but I think he improved in the passing game last year. Now, has he had injury situations? Yes. Missed five games last year, missed three in 2021. So I think he's a guy that they should try to re-sign. And we should mention our good friend Jim Wyatt, a Titans insider, had an interesting little comment in his mailbag of all things last week, where he kind of offhandedly said, "I don't expect Nate Davis to be back next year." So take that for what you will. But maybe that, you know, the Titans have already chosen or will likely choose to move on. David Long, I think it depends on the price tag, certainly. You know, he's another guy. I think there are not a lot of guys, especially on this roster, that can do what he does, both in terms of the run game. I think he was a big reason why the Titans ranked, you know, was one or two against the run by the end of the year. And, you know, he's a three down guy. Obviously, he's a pretty good coverage guy as well. And I'm not sure, you know, even when you're looking at a Monty Rice or a Jack Gibbons or anyone like that, you know, I don't know if they have the same skills as David Long. The issue with David Long is, what do you pay him? Because he's missed 12 games in the last 2 years. And that might be one reason. You know, I was looking for a couple of market values for David Long. Wildly different market values. Pro Football Focus said 4 years, $55 million for him, which would be almost $14 million a year. SpotTrack, on the other hand, 2 years, $10.3 million, which is about $5 million a year, which sounds much better. That sounds like a great deal right there. So if you can come to a good price for David Long, I think they should make an effort to bring him back.
John, I agree with you. Well, I would like to see both of them back. I was kind of reading over you're talking about Nate. I love Nate Davis. I think he's been consistent since entering the league in 2019 out of Charlotte. You think about that 2020 season. I thought he had a Pro Bowl season. I thought he was one of the best guards in the league. Unfortunately, injuries they can derail a career. But what's kind of scary to me, and I was reading something, it says, think about if Nate leaves. And let's also talk about Ben Jones possibly retiring. The Titans will need to replace, four offensive linemen. That means they would have to – you would have four new offensive linemen in 2023. What's even scarier, you're talking about this is a team that you just lost your coach, who Keith Carter was fired. The offensive coordinator, Todd Downing, was fired. You talk about the weakness of your team was your offensive line. And then you talk about needing to reveal. What's scary is that entering 2023, let's say if Ben – retires, and let's say if Nate goes in free agency, the Titans would only have one player on the contract, and that's a rookie, Nicholas Petit-Frere. That's even scarier because you know who that affects. You got a 35-year-old quarterback in Ryan Tannehill coming back next year. You're talking about Derrick Henry. He's 29 years, so that's something that the Titans and Rand Carthon, they're going to pay close attention to.
Yeah, the offensive line thing is interesting to me because clearly it needs to be better. It needs to be dramatically better than it was this past season. But how, can you afford to just tear the whole thing up and start from scratch? And if you do that, how quickly can you make that into a good unit? It sounds like Ben Jones wants to come back and play again, even after concussion issues, which is, you wish him the best. You know, that's certainly his choice to make at this point, but it's going to be a real issue for this team. What you do with this offensive line. All right. Well, those are decisions that Rand Carthon and his staff are going to have to make, and they do have time to make them. When those decisions are made, we of course will take a deeper look at them. But until then, there will be other things to discuss, and we will be back next week to discuss them. As always, thank you, Denard Walker.
Thank you,
John Glennon. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
And thanks to all you out there who continue to listen and download and tell your friends. This is the Believe in Titans podcast, brought to you by Bet Online.